Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Colmena Seguros presenta una historia imparable.
Cuando uno de mis trabajadores sufrió un accidente en la empresa, sentí miedo. Pensaba en él, en su familia y en todo lo que podía pasar. Pero la verdad, ese miedo duró poco, porque Colmena Seguros estuvo a nuestro lado, guiándonos y acompañándonos para que la recuperación fuera más rápida. Hoy mi empresa sigue adelante, con la tranquilidad y respaldo de Colmena.
Colmena Seguros, la aseguradora de las empresas que no paran de salir adelante.
Vigilado Superintendencia Financiera de Colombia. Colmena Seguros, una empresa de Fundación Grupo Social.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the ImpactVest podcast, transformative global innovation in a new era of impact. I'm Aisha Williams, the founder and CEO of ImpactVest, and along with our guest host, we aim to inspire and motivate towards collective positive global impact to solve our world's most pressing challenges in sustainability. With each episode, we will engage in insightful conversations with global changemakers, visionaries, and sustainability activists who wish to build a more sustainable and resilient future. Join us now as we create the future of impact.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our podcast. I hope you're having a great start to the week. And today, I am speaking to Wilfred Ihoba, who is the founder of Ihoba and Company. Welcome to our podcast, Wilfred.
Oh, thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, it's a pleasure to have you here. So can you tell us a bit about your company and your vision behind launching it?
So Ihoba, the company is an ESG consultancy, so we help business. So we assist businesses on their paths to become more sustainable. We provide practical environmental, social, and governance solutions to businesses. We help them to make their strategy on achieving sustainability.
And so when you're helping clients become more sustainable, what are some of the most common challenges that you find?
We first of all carry out a stakeholder engagement. So we look at the stakeholders' priority, which of the sustainable attributes or indices are more important to the client. So after we carry out each stakeholder engagement with the client, so it varies. It depends on the priority of the stakeholders of the business. And also, we also focus on the regulatory framework in order for us to design a strategy for most of these businesses.
And how has your own background informed these stakeholder frameworks that you're building for clients, because you were a youth advisor to the European Union delegation to Nigeria, and you were also invited by the French government to participate in the new Africa France summit in Montpellier. So how has your background actually informed the type of frameworks that you're creating for clients?
For my master's dissertation, I wrote on energy vendor. So that actually exposed me a lot to sustainability and energy transition. So energy vendor is an energy policy in Germany that started during the first OPEC crisis. Unfortunately, we are experiencing the same situation currently in Israel. So it totally happened during crisis in the Middle East between Israel and other Arab countries, and the OPEC increased the price for most of these foil products. So in most developed countries, they were looking for alternative for a carbon-intensive economy. So in Germany, they started the energy vendor policy that looked into how they can transition from a carbon-intensive economy to a more sustainable economy. So I wrote about that policy framework for my dissertation. And also, I followed a lot of climate conferences I followed the 2015 Paris Conference. I followed the 2022 Biodiversity Conference in Canada. And I've started my organization. We've engaged in a lot of most of these forums and also had discussions with politicians, policymakers, and also our businesses on their view about sustainability.
And so it's quite important to know the different frameworks and the different sustainability initiatives across countries and jurisdictions to be able to create a holistic framework. And I'm sure that you've seen that working with your clients. So on the road to 2030, which is right around the corner here, what do you feel that clients are asking for now that they may not have been asking for even a couple of years ago to be able to prepare their companies for the transition to 2030?
I think if you follow the TPT released a new framework, a new guideline to transition. I think it was released today. I was supposed to follow the online webinar. I don't know if it's a webinar, but it's a conference. I was supposed to follow it, but I was very, very busy. So, but I have the PDF file with me and I've gone through it. So one of the problems with businesses and also financial institutions, we're also very involved in sustainable finance, is that most of these businesses do not know how to navigate or to set strategy for their businesses because transition plan is extremely complex and it is very difficult. And also because of, so we also look at another factor also by politicians, or not just politicians, but our government over the country because of the Russian war in Ukraine, and also currently the current crisis in Israel. So there's a forecast or there's a prediction that there's going to be an increase in most of these urban products. So it's going to make transition plan become very, very expensive for most businesses. So our businesses need a lot of incentives and a lot of frameworks, easy frameworks by most of these regulatory bodies or most of these frameworks or institutions. They need a lot of guide about it. They need a lot of conversation. So there should be a very good communication between most of these regulatory frameworks and also most of these government, most of these are businesses.
How do you find that small businesses actually obtain information about the current regulatory environment for ESG? Do you feel like it's easily accessible to most small businesses, or how do you think that the regulatory bodies could make it more accessible for most small businesses to be able to create their transition plans?
So transition plans is extremely voluntary for most small businesses. So most of these businesses, like I said, I think there's a very huge role for small businesses in terms of disclosing their climate-related risk and also opportunities in terms of achieving a net zero economy by 2050 or 2035 by some countries. So most of these businesses, there's a lack of communication between most of these regulatory frameworks or these regulatory institutions and small businesses. And also there should be more cooperation between small businesses. And there should be more cooperation with small businesses and also businesses that are also large institutions that have the capacity to guide these most of these businesses to adopt a sustainable plans, and also the local governments. So the local government needs to play a lot of role. So we work with we're currently working with some local government institutions in terms of giving advice to businesses and also to plan to work with us, a lot of our small businesses, and also help them with their transition framework. So there should be a constant communication between the regulatory institutions and also with small businesses. It should be very collaborative. So government have to work with most of these businesses. And also there should be a lot of investment in green skill in transition education. So education has a lot of role to play in most of these activities. And also there should be an encouragement of secularity. So most of these businesses need to understand how to transition from a linear-based economy to a more transition, to a more secular-based business model.
Do you find that there is a difference between jurisdictions on how ESG and impact is approached? For example, we've found many times within our portfolio companies that the S in ESG is highly valued in terms of how do we actually verify it, measure it, how do we take into account social issues when we're speaking about ESG. When we get here into Europe or the UK or the US, the E is more favored in ESG in terms of environmental concerns. And so how do you feel that the approach or perspective towards ESG and impact vary across jurisdictions? And how does that affect the frameworks that you create for your clients?
Well, recently, I think three labels was the regulatory body introduced three labels to recognize an ESG fund. So there is a sustainable focus fund. There is an impact business, there's an impact fund that has its major focus is to address social and environment needs. We are not much into ESG investment, but it's something we are exploring. Today we had before this meeting, we had a discussion with another ESG investment organization about collaboration. We are not much into it, but we have a lot of discussion and a lot of collaboration with most of these ESG firms or ESG community. So one is to understand what is being deemed as sustainable. So I think for a business, you have to understand or have a very good knowledge of interior labels of sustainable funds. Another is to have meetings with most of your investors or your stakeholders of what they perceive as being called sustainable. Some might, although the environmental aspect of sustainability is more recognizable by the public, but also the social and the governance aspect is extremely important. I'm not sure if you read, I read about 6 days ago, I read a report in the Financial Times on the downtrend of ESG, and they did some analysis of how ESG had a very good attraction from 2017 to 2021, and how currently, especially in the US, how there have been a downtrend when it comes to ESG in the US. Although in the European countries, it's a bit stable, but compared to the US, it's having a downtrend at the moment, especially by politicians who see most of these who see ESG as being a diversion from companies performing their utmost duty. They see it as a diversion, and not just that, most businesses don't see it as sustainable. Most businesses, they don't perceive it as sustainable. People see it as scam. So they have to be an underlying knowledge about what is sustainable. So there need to be a lot of education on sustainability, the importance of sustainability, and how it can guide to achieving a net zero economy.
Yes, and I think that's a great point, that there is a divergence between the US and Europe and the UK in terms of how ESG is viewed and the integration of ESG within financial decisions. I find here in Europe and the UK that there is a deep integration of impact and ESG throughout, we'll say, making a portfolio or financial decision. And in the US, it seems to be more of a divergence in terms of what could be possible, the negative effect of ESG on an investment. And so so when we speak about sustainability, it really is depending on the cultural perspective of what is considered sustainable, like you said, Wilfred, and that becomes really qualitative and subjective, right? And that is probably for the regulatory bodies quite challenging to be able to place something that is subjective into a quantitative framework, right? How do you approach this within your work, these sort of varied definitions of sustainability across jurisdictions, across countries, and then somehow in sustainability and impact, we have to be able to place it within a cohesive framework. So how do you kind of place all of these differing perspectives together within the frameworks that you create for your clients?
So firstly, we have to look at most of the guidelines set by regulatory institutions or government institutions. So mostly we look at TPT reports. Like I said, there was a report that I read, the TPT report. This is called a Transition Plan Task Force here in the UK. And also we look at guidelines set by GFANS. We look at IFRS. We look at those kinds of reports in order for us to have a concise and also a framework that is in line with a national guideline. So that is extremely important to have a framework to be on the same page with most of these regulatory institutions. Another is collaboration. So we also try to join in discussion with other institutions, especially big institutions, on what they perceive as sustainable and how they go about their sustainability strategy. So over time, we've been part of most of this discussion. Last week was the Economies Sustainability Week. We were part of, we tried to be part of it. I think it was from Monday to Thursday. So we engaged in most of the conversations by most sustainability heads in most of our different organizations, not just in the UK, but all over the world, and also collaboration. So we have a lot of collaborations with a lot of companies. We don't do carbon accounting, so we have a collaboration with a carbon accounting companies. We have a collaboration with a financial sustainable institution. We have collaboration. So collaboration plays a huge role in understanding most of these frameworks and most of these and most of these acronyms. Actually, there's a lot of acronyms when it comes to sustainability, especially here in the UK. Too much acronyms to scale through, but when you collaborate or you have discussions about this, it is very easy for you to understand this. And also, naturally, with natural disasters all over the world, currently in the UK, I think there's a heat wave. I'm currently experiencing a lot of heat at the moment. So people are beginning to perceive and also experience increase in climate change. And this is a climate risk for businesses. So naturally, people are trying to engage in this kind of conversation on how the climate temperature should be reduced, on how it can be stable. So, and also other natural disasters in other countries are making people becoming more aware of achieving net zero. So there should be, and going forward, there should be a lot of discussions about this. There should be a lot of, we see like rules of policies around the world. We see what, in the US, the role of the Inflation Reduction Act, the role it's playing in encouraging sustainability in the US, same with China, same with Singapore. And also other developing countries making pledges to become more sustainable by 2050. So there's a lot of work going on at the moment.
Yes, and it's great that you mentioned the Inflation Reduction Act. That is a great law aimed at reducing the negative impacts of climate change. And we all feel the effects of climate change, and businesses definitely do within their supply chains and throughout the value chain of the business. And so even if you are a small business and you don't have an obligation to actually report on any climate-related impacts, now that we all know that climate change is here, that there many businesses want to be able to implement transition plans to be able to be prepared for possibly further effects caused by the climate crisis. So if I was a small business, for example, and I wanted to prepare my business for 2030 to prepare for further effects of climate change on my business, on the value chain and supply chain within it, what would be the number one piece of advice, Wilfred, that you could give me to prepare my business?
So first of all, is to understand what is sustainability and how you can look at how you can measure your carbon footprints within your organization. So we make you understand scope one, scope two, scope three emission, although scope three is very difficult for small businesses because it's very expensive. So we look at your scope one emission, we look at your scope two. We first of all make most of these terms become more easy to understand for most of these businesses. And also we make them understand the importance of sustainability and the benefits. We make them understand that this is not just a pledge, a national pledge or something you have to do to be patriotic. There's also a financial benefit attached to it. So being very sustainable, you meet most of this standard by most of these regulatory body. And also your customers, most customers currently, they, especially with the younger generations, they like to patronize businesses that are sustainable. So when your business becomes sustainable, you get a lot of customers. And also, if you are looking at expansion, so for instance, you want to go to the bank to get a loan or you want an equity investment. So most investors, they look at how sustainable your business is and the kind of sustainability measures you've adopted. So make you understand not just the obligation of becoming more sustainable, we also make you understand the benefits of being sustainable. And also we try to make you understand the procedures on becoming sustainable, make it extremely easy for you, because most of small businesses, they are not very educated on sustainability measures. So you make it extremely easy for you without mentioning most of these acronyms, because the acronyms are extremely numerous. So you make it more easy. And the last is also to advise on incentives by the government. So different governments all over the world are providing incentives for businesses to make it more easy for businesses to adopt to become more sustainable and to adopt most of these sustainability strategy.
And that's really excellent advice. Thank you, Wilfred. And I know that our listeners will appreciate it as well. Well, thank you very much for being on our podcast today. And I do hope that we see each other again at a conference in the future. We actually met at the Economist Impact Conference, and so I am sure that we'll be seeing each other again.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, Wilfred.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the ImpactVest podcast, Transformative Global Innovation in a New Era of Impact. Join us next week for another episode and become part of our ImpactVest newsletter community, where you will receive all of the latest updates about our work in this new era of innovative impact finance. See you next week as we create the future of finance at ImpactVest.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Colmena Seguros presenta una historia imparable.
Cuando uno de mis trabajadores sufrió un accidente en la empresa, sentí miedo. Pensaba en él, en su familia y en todo lo que podía pasar. Pero la verdad, ese miedo duró poco, porque Colmena Seguros estuvo a nuestro lado, guiándonos y acompañándonos para que la recuperación fuera más rápida. Hoy mi empresa sigue adelante, con la tranquilidad y respaldo de Colmena.
Colmena Seguros, la aseguradora de las empresas que no paran de salir adelante. Vigilado Superintendencia Financiera de Colombia. Colmena Seguros, una empresa de Fundación Grupo Social.